What up, everybody? It's Double G for the Fight Game Podcast. Even though we didn't leave you with no content while I was gone, first show that we're doing in our normal style of show with the Dynamite review and just the pro wrestling news. And what's funny is that when we did the draft show, I made a statement that said, you know, if anything crazy happens while I'm gone, just know that we're recording this a couple weeks early. And then Vince McMahon steps down and we are talking about a wrestling ecosystem that is quite different than it would be. So yeah. That's where we are now. We are in a new wrestling ecosystem with Triple H as the head of creative for WWE. And I think that's going to be the topic that we lead here with. Of course, we'll have our Dynamite review after this segment. But I kind of want to get John's thoughts because we previously did this show with the idea that we were going to review NXT and AEW. Mm-hmm. And then NXT changed and it wasn't for the better. And we decided to punt on that show. But, you know, we're very familiar with what Triple H was doing at NXT before they switched that show. And, you know, I don't know how much influence that he's going to have with the booking of that show now. But you would expect at least somewhat, because he had a specific vision and he and Sean are very close. I would imagine that the show, it may not go back to the black and gold, but it could show more shades of what they were doing there. So, you know, we're very familiar with this booking. And I guess the question that I have for you, first question, is now with Triple H in charge, what do you think will be different about the main roster WWE from when Vince was in charge?
I think there'll be more cohesive storylines. There won't be much last minute changing of everything and dropping stuff, you know, after a few weeks. I think there'll be an overall goal, or, you know, they'll know where to get to. You know, Triple H did that in NXT. He had to pivot sometimes because of, you know, call ups or whatnot. But I think it'll just be just a more cohesive story, like storyline throughout the whole show. There'll be better, you know, build people. I think newer stars will get a chance. I think one of our big complaints forever with NXT and what hurt NXT was when the people get called up to go to the main roster, they're majority of the time not used well, which hurt the perception of NXT, hurt maybe people stop caring about NXT. I think now with Triple H in charge, because he knows the talent, he knows everyone involved, when people get called up, you know, no one's going to influence them to say, hey, this guy's not that good, blah, 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 right? Because yeah, he knows them, you know? They could do that with Vince because Vince doesn't watch it. Vince was in his own world. He sees this person get called up and he says, oh, Adam Cole, this guy's 5'8", right? Mm-hmm. Like, what are we going to do this guy? But Triple H, you know, he doesn't see a guy 5'8". He's a guy that's a good promo, a good wrestler. So he would have done something. He wouldn't put him in that manager role. Same thing with LA Knight. I don't think LA Knight would have been in that position if Triple H was in charge then. So I think we're going to see a lot of that. And I think it's going to just make the product better overall, because they need some new talent. And I guess I didn't watch Raw, but I saw they put Ciampa over in a match. Yep. And he has a big match coming up next week. In ring was a focus for that. You know, a lot of matches went past two segs, and they had it was about athleticism, and people were raving about the Mustafa Ali and AJ Styles, and who else was in the opener? It was
they had two triple threat matches.
Basically, the opening match was between three guys that weren't really even featured that much.
Yeah, you know? It was Miz, AJ, and
AJ, and then
was it Dolph? Or maybe it was Mustafa Ali, and then the other one was Dolph, yeah, Gable, and Ciampa.
Yeah, so Mustafa, you know, is a guy that hasn't been given too much, and now here he is, the chance to shine, right? And show what he can do, and not just get killed or something like that. So I think it's a good thing. And from what I'm hearing, like, just the overall vibe in the locker room is very positive again. People are very optimistic about this. So,
kind of about what you just said, what do you think about talent who they've cut and where it seemed like there was maybe a plan for this talent before decisions had been changed? Now, we saw Dakota Kai come back at SummerSlam. There's Sasha Banks and Naomi just kind of hanging out there going like, you know, I mean, if you want to make that bang on SmackDown, like Sasha Banks comes out to start that show, right? Do you know anything about previous talent who may have been like, oh my gosh, like, you know, I've been, you know, this is my dream, and then they get cut, and AEW's picked up a lot of those folks, but they picked up everybody, and I just kind of wonder if there's other folks hanging out there where all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, WWE is definitely a choice again.
Yeah. Oh, I think so, for sure. I wouldn't doubt. I don't know if he'll go rehire everyone. You know, that's not unsigned right now. But I think, yeah, he'll reach out to certain ones, right? I wouldn't doubt if Johnny Gargano comes back.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he was a Triple H guy, and Triple H knows how to use him and book him and knows, you know, I think he'll do great if he comes back, you know. And Johnny Gargano was always leaving at the end of his contract.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to be a father for, you know, he wanted to take time and, you know, spend time with his kid. And I think that's great. You know, like, shoot, I've been going for so long. You need to take a break. And what a better time to take a break with your newborn baby, right? Like, that's commendable. So now that Triple H is in charge, yeah, I think he's, you know, probably thinking about going back, you know, so. And who knows? They probably already did it. We don't know. But I'm guessing certain talents is going to be coming back, I think, that are unsigned, you know. And then you'll see some aggressive play for AEW free agents when their contracts come up. A guy like Wardlow probably be on high on the list. MGF higher on your list, I'm sure. So Tony Khan's really going to have to start forking out money. Right to start.
Yeah, that's why this upcoming TV deal is so important, which is kind of crazy, because I don't know how close you've been paying attention to this, but this, you know, this Warner stuff.
Very close.
There, it sounds like they're just really breaking up the HBO Max to, you know, stuff. They're like, why don't we have two HBOs? Like, we have HBO and we have HBO Max. We don't need to duplicate these roles, so we're going to get rid of the HBO Max side. And you know, they have to figure out a way to, like, shave off, you know, X number of billions from. and so how does AEW fit in? And I don't imagine that of all the content that they have and all the deals that they have, AEW's probably on the cheaper side of things. And, you know, if you do a metric of, like, you know, cost per or value per dollar or whatever, they're probably decent. They probably do decent in that kind of metric. But you just kind of wonder with all these changes and the bottom line and everything, like, where they fit. And that's why it's kind of scary for AEW, because if they get, you know, a similar TV deal to the one that they have now, which that is not really what's going on in TV with sports today, is there's just increase and increase and increase. You know, they're probably about where they're at, and they may have to think about salaries and budgets and stuff. But if they do get that bump, then, you know, you can compete not quite dollar for dollar with WWE, but, you know, not that far off either.
Yeah. I think they'll still get a good deal, AEW. But yeah, this time the Warner and the Discovery Plus thing has been, I'm like, fuck, do I really want to keep this HBO Max subscription I have? Like,
it's like my favorite one.
I know, exactly. I was so impressed by it. Like, movies come out pretty quickly. Yeah. During the pandemic, of course, they released them very quickly. And I'm like, dude, this is great. What a great service. And now I'm like,
I know.
I don't know. Like, they were thinking about cutting certain shows. Like, better not be taking Step by Step off. You know, like, get upset. You know what I'm saying? Like,
okay, so what do you think is going to be, like, very much the same as Vince McMahon's WWE? What does Triple H just go, you know what? we're not changing this at all because this works. Like, do you think about, you know, some of the stuff that, that maybe Triple H is not really going to look to put his stamp on?
Maybe no blood might still be, you know, I don't know. Let's say go that TV, whatever, 14 they're talking about. I keep thinking all the stuff I want him to change. That's what I keep thinking. Like, I was thinking, like, what's coming up? Like, isn't, like, Hell in a Cell coming up in, like, in a couple months?
I think, like, it's probably the October show.
Yeah, so it's like, I wish, okay, just get through this year because everything's kind of already laid out, right? Graphics probably made, all that stuff. Buildings are already set. But next year, I would like to see him, like, clean slate of pay-per-views. We're not doing, like, Hell in a Cell unless we're building to a Hell in a Cell, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I want to see. So I think, I don't know. That's hard to answer. What do you think? Do you think he's going to not change anything?
I think he
can't change 3 hours of Raw because they're getting paid for that third hour.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, it's the best deal that they got. Yeah. I think sort of how he's coming across in the public, like, he's very much, you know, this history of Vince and you know, the genius of Vince McMahon and stuff. And I think that is fine because you want the Vince McMahon WWE stable, consistent audience. You want those people to stay. You don't want them to go anywhere, right? Mm-hmm. So he's got this interesting task of, like, keeping the fan base as it is, that consistent fan base, and then possibly get some of the folks from the other side who, you know, the AEW fans who were like, I'm never watching WWE ever again. Mm-hmm. This is so terrible and I'm so frustrated and my intelligence has been insulted and X, Y, and Z, right? All of us have fallen off of WWE at some point. And, you know, even now I watch the Hulu cut, but I'm mostly watching it because I got to talk about all this stuff and be on top of it.
Yeah.
If the show gets better, then I'll gladly, you know, watch it. And not just look at it as like, oh, this is just kind of work. But there's an opportunity, and I saw it in our Facebook group. I mentioned this to Andrew Zarian yesterday on We're Live Pal. But our Facebook group is, I don't know, 80-20 when it comes to they favor AEW over WWE. And there was a lot of people in that 80 who were like, you know what? I'm going to give Raw a chance. I want to see what Triple H is going to do. Like, I can support a Triple H run WWE, and so they gave Raw a chance, and I wouldn't say Raw was the best show it's ever been, but it was. There were some positive signs that if you were looking for, like, if your question was like you said, Ali, you know, gosh, why don't they push that guy? Well, he got a little bit of a showcase there. He didn't win, but he got to do some stuff. Mm-hmm. Same with, you know, Chad Gable. He got to wrestle a little bit. Him and Dolph got to do some actually real wrestling there for a little bit. So if that's what you're looking for, maybe you're like, oh, I'll come back next week and I want to see what they do. Yeah. And so if he's got that kind of goodwill, then, you know, maybe he can sort of take the best of, you know, let's keep these Vince fans and then let's bring over a few more AEW fans. And that's kind of, not saying it's Tony Khan's worst nightmare, but part of the blueprint for AEW was to go, Vince McMahon alienated these people. You know, let's see if we can, you know, create some of our fan base with those people. Now, it wasn't all that. It was, you know, this indie fan base that, you know, they were watching a lot of indie wrestling and they're keeping up with all these different promotions and they, you know, they catered towards that fan. But also, you know, there were NXT fans who were really in love with that product that Triple H was putting out, and AEW comes in and then they go, oh, like, this is... this feels a little bit more major league than this WWE network thing, you know? So I think he's got a very interesting job. I'm so intrigued less about the actual wrestling show and just more about what the plans are as far as the creative, like who does he, because he's got to see what we see, which is there's no baby faces who are over and it's Roman against, you know, whomever, Brock 25 times. And it's so funny because, and this is like wrestling fans in a nutshell to me, and manipulating wrestling fans. Roman Reigns, I said this when we were on Sunday at Dave's, Roman Reigns beats everybody, is a babyface, and they hate him. Roman Reigns today beats everybody, is a heel, and they love him. It's like the same guy to me. I mean, the character's a little bit different, but
the character's
the same.
A little different, but it's he's still cool babyface too.
I thought he was great.
Yeah,
the other
too.
Way as well. Yeah. Like I wasn't sick of him, and so it's just funny how, you know, just that little change, and all of a sudden fans are like, "See, this is the Roman we wanted." And it's like, is it really? Because he's kind of the same Roman to me.
We don't be force fed Roman Reigns, bunch of idiots.
But so I really want to see what he does with the babyface side, because he's got to see what I see, which is outside of Drew, which they're going to have this shot. On the UK show, the same weekend as All Out. That is one guy who they've been saving up and they've been building it. It's going to be, I think it's going to be really good.
Yeah.
But after that, it's a Riddle here who, you know, they use to lose all the big matches. Mm-hmm. And, you know, who else is it after that? You can always bring Brock back, you know, until it stops working, which maybe it stops working the next time. I don't know. But that match at SummerSlam was pretty fun there at the end.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think, you know, if he's seeing like, oh, yeah, we need to really build some baby faces here because that's what we're saw. Now, Cody going down hurts, but you got to have more than just Cody, right? You got to have like three or four or five guys who are just kind of waiting in the wings there ready in case somebody gets hurt and you need to plug them in. And they just don't have that right now. So that's kind of what I'm looking to see what he does.
It's like a lot of people were thinking like, oh, that, you know, I saw some people were very positive about Raw, and I saw some people were like, well, they didn't do enough. Well, you don't want to do everything in one show, right? You have to sprinkle it over the next few weeks. And I think SmackDown will be very newsworthy. I'm actually going to watch SmackDown, not live, but right after it airs, I'll probably watch it so I can kind of fast forward to commercials. I think we're on a positive swing with WWE, and I think we're either going to start getting some of those fans back, and we'll see. One thing I do know won't change, sadly, is unless some exceptions, I'm guessing, right? I don't think the keeping their original name is going to stay. I think they want names that they own, right? So you'll see that.
I mean, I'm okay with that. I thought you were going to say they're going to keep Kevin Dunn and all the camera cuts, and that's when
I don't think they're going to be, you know, hacking. I don't think he's hacking that quick with it, right? But I think eventually Kevin Dunn has to, you know, for a long time.
That guy's got so much money and so much stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
he just needs to retire and go live in Hawaii. All right, last question before we talk about Dynamite here, which is, what do you think is going to happen to our once beloved NXT?
I don't know. It's going to be a back, like you said, back to black and gold right away. But I think you're going to start seeing a lot of the goofiness kind of go away. I think you're going to get back to the NXT we enjoyed, the wrestling, the storytelling that was pretty good booking, you know, on a weekly basis. I think that's going to come back. I think we'll be back to maybe hiring some independent talent to kind of, you know, instead of all this green talent. So I think we'll see that. So I think it's going to start, you know, I don't know if it's going to turn to black and gold. I am guessing a takeover will come back as takeover.
Gosh,
which is gonna
I
be
hope
nice.
So.
So yeah, I think it's, there are going to be some changes, not, but they might even do, you know, they could do. You can kind of continue this 2.0 business for a while and slowly plant seeds for like the NXT black and gold brand. And then you can do like a little program where at War Games, actually, shit, that's perfect time. November 2.0 versus black and gold again.
Well, didn't they do that last War Games?
They did. And who won? 2.0, right?
Yeah.
So this time around, you know, maybe, you know, people that can set up to lose, you don't want to hurt like some of the younger stars. You know, you don't want to hurt Carmella Hayes. You don't want to hurt Bron Breakker.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Those guys might even be up by then, honestly. So
yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be fun. I think it's exciting time for us as wrestling fans. Sure.
All right. Let's talk about this Dynamite show. Before we get into it, you were one of the few people who did not like last week's show.
Yeah, what the hell is all these people's problem?
I still haven't finished it. I got about 60% of the way through it. I liked what I saw. Yeah. So what was your overall take on this week's show?
Still a gimmick from Dave. I kind of have a thumbs in the middle on this one.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like an easy watch. There's some stuff that just makes me scratch my head or hit my head against a wall, but like it was an easy watch, I guess. You know, kind of went by pretty quickly and nothing too offensive.
There's a saying, less is more. And I wouldn't even say this was, they didn't really pull back that much, but just mm-hmm. the fact that they pulled back a little bit, I definitely felt it. And like you said, it was an easy watch. I didn't have any anxiety really watching this show outside of maybe a little bit in the dumpster match.
Yes.
Where I was kind of worried for people's lives. But other than that, you know, there's goofy stuff we're going to talk about. There's a one spot that I want to give a lot of attention to in the women's tag match that I thought was a little frustrating. But, you know, we had a long Christian and Matt Hardy match, which is like the grandpa's version of 1999 match between the two guys. And which is funny because I actually thought the slowed down version, old man Matt Hardy, it was a little bit of a better match than I was actually expecting going into it. Because I just thought, oh, Matt, he's so slow. He's so old. You know, poor guy is just taking all these crazy bumps. And Christian, like, almost looks exactly the same. Like, Christian is so good for his age. But I thought Hardy did a good job because he couldn't do all of these crazy things. And, you know, he did take the one table spot. But I was like, oh, you know, this match as the slowed down old man version, I didn't hate it. I kind of liked it. So, there's stuff like that all over the show.
Obviously, this show is the start of leading into All Out, right? So this show, we got a lot more promos, a very talky show.
There was only one. Let me count them. One, two, three, and the Hobbs and Ren Jones was a squash.
And let me count.
Four.
Let me see.
Five, six matches.
Yeah, and they're promo wise, there's one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, eight promos via backstage or in ring or, you know, quick little, pre-tape promos and stuff like that.
And, you know, the one, I guess, anxiety moment of the show is they're trying to basically sell us on the idea that we need to watch Rampage, which nobody is watching these days. We need to watch Battle of the Belts, which I can't imagine does any sort of rating whatsoever. And then next Wednesday's Quake by the Lake or whatever they're calling that show. So they were like building up three shows off of this one show.
Yeah, nine promos because I forgot about the Cesaro and Takeshka promo.
Oh yeah,
it really sold me on that. Okay, I already know Takeshka is a good worker. I know Claudio is a good worker. I know that's going to be a good match because you know we know them as talents, right?
Yeah.
But if you're just like just a casual viewer and the guy's like, I never won a match here. I'm going to win this one. Like, you know what?
That's his gimmick, right? Like, that's his gimmick at this point.
This guy gets so many opportunities, the titles, and he's got or opportunities to win matches, to get titles, losing. And you got guys winning that are just never on TV. You know, they're winning. Then all of a sudden they have this big bloated record because they beat a couple job guys on Dark and... Yeah, yeah.
All right, beginning of the show is Orange Cassidy and Jay Lethal. And I was like, okay, you know, I know there's going to be some stuff that Cassidy does that's going to bother me. But there's also stuff that he does that I really like. And they not too long after the match starts, they go to the outside. Jay Lethal is crawling. Orange Cassidy's doing his light kicks and he's loading up to do the slow motion super kick.
Yeah.
And the referee is chilling inside the ring. He's just like, he's just hanging out. And the so the thing is there. I'm assuming.
I think his old Bryce Ringsburg is probably practice improv comedy out there.
The whole reason, at least as far as I can tell, the payoff of this thing was we saw Satnam Singh, who's standing on the stage, and then the worst friends come out with one on top of the other to be as tall as Satnam Singh. So I think that's the payoff for them spending 45 seconds outside of the ring only to come back in. I guess that was it. So yeah, this little goofy thing. So I didn't like that, obviously, to start the show.
It's the old, you know, it'd be funny if, and Tony Khan's like, yeah, sounds great. Even though what it did was hurt his giant, because Satnam comes out and then he's confronted by these two dorks with Trent on Chuck's shoulders, right? The big jacket that look like they're, you know, the old we watch it all the time because my kids like the movie. Little Rascals from the 90s remake, where the kids come into the bank as Amish and with Mel Brooks, and they try to open an account, right? They're doing that shtick. And Satnam's just looking at him. And Sanjay's late to pull him away. So Satnam, the giant, he should just knock those fools down, right?
Yeah.
So he's done. And actually, the opening minutes of this match, I liked. I'm like, wow, this might be my favorite Orange Cassidy match now. Like this might be the one. And then he pulled this stuff, and it took me really out of it. But then, you know, Lethal, when he took over, his heat was good. I like that the heat actually went through the, like, out coming outside of the break, instead of, like, what they do is usually the heat's, like, during a break, so you miss all the heels heat in the match, and then the babyface start making a comeback right when they come back on theirs. This time, there's actually, you know, Lethal was still working on Cassie, and that was good. I didn't like that he got the figure four, and Cassie quickly got the ropes. Like, if he was closer to the ropes, I can believe it, but he was kind of in the middle, and he just quickly kind of got the ropes. I didn't like that too much. And then Lethal eventually beats Orange Cassidy, which I thought, holy cow, I did not expect that. That was great.
Lethal injection.
The lethal injection. And then
Cassidy missed the super punch. Okay, so before we get to the after part of this match, which there was a part of it that I really didn't like, but the one thing I have, I like the fact that Orange, as the small guy who gets beat up a lot, he does have to sell. Now, a lot of his moves, his entire move set is based on running or jumping, so he has to then, you know, do that. The problem is, when he sells, sometimes I think he sells a little bit too much, almost like you would sell if, let's say you're playing basketball and you stepped on somebody's foot and you roll your ankle and you just literally can't put any weight on it. Like, that's how he's selling. And so he's selling like he can barely put weight on his foot, and then all of a sudden he jumps into the Superman punch. And so that, like,
well, I think he was playing possum there, though, to give him kind of like
the announcers didn't explain it that way. So maybe he wasn't.
That's how I took it. Yeah.
But I wish the selling was a little bit more subtle, because I could buy, you know, this jolt of adrenaline if you kind of have like an achy knee. What I can't buy is you tear your ACL and you can barely walk, and then you can run the ropes as fast as humanly possible. Like, that's the part that I don't like. But so Lethal wins match. Dutt comes out to interview him. Lethal and Dutt call out Wardlow. Lethal says that he's going to put Cassidy back in the figure four, and he puts him in the figure four. I'm waiting for Wardlow to be the hero of this. Like, he's going to come down, he's going to save Cassidy. But no, first the worst friends come out, and then Lethal bails, and then Wardlow comes out. And there's no pop for Wardlow, or the pop is lower than it would have been, because the worst friends got the hero pop that was supposed to be for Wardlow. That made no sense to me.
I think he's kind of cooling a little bit, because I think they've kind of stunted his momentum. I don't think that was a good idea to do the match with Orange Cassidy. Didn't think that was a good idea at all. He came out, and then he comes out. The Wardlow's world.
Yeah,
come on, bro. Come on. Someone has to tell him no.
Did your kids ever get into Elmo's world?
Yeah, yeah, for a little
la
bit.
La 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 la. That's what I expect him to do right before he says Wardlow's world. La la.
Yeah,
la,
I'm sure
Wardlow's world.
Some heel would say that. They should. It's just I just saw Lethal lose to Samoa Joe, and now he's getting a title shot against Wardlow at the Battle of Belts because they just need a match for Battle of Belts. Could they have anyone else ready for Wardlow and like kind of rehab little Jay Lethal here instead of just winning a match, just lose? So he's not really going to gain much for even beating Orange Cassidy. In the end, he's just going to get beat by Saturday, right? It's this weekend.
Yeah. They're taping it Friday. So this is a small thing, but again, Wardlow shouldn't be wearing a shirt, not a dress shirt. This dude should come out like Bill Goldberg in his wrestling uniform, like every time you see him, just to show how ripped he is and, you know, how impressive looking he is and how wild and crazy guy mm-hmm. he is. Just coming out in a dress shirt, I'm just I don't want corporate Wardlow.
Come out to the dress shirt, and as you're coming to the ring, start ripping it off and pulling off like you're about to get into some shit, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
not just come out and look GQ because he wants to, you know, show off the money he's been making and buying some expensive shirts.
All right, next segment was a story time with Adam Cole, baby. We haven't seen.
No, it was real quick. I want to give them credit for this.
What
they showed Hook defeating Starks for the title, and they highlighted it.
Yeah.
Which is good. Like, sometimes stuff happens, and they'll come back and even talk about it. So, I give them credit for that. Now, they did it for the FTW title of all things, and Hook. There's bigger moments to go back and review and show highlights of. But whatever. Like, I give them credit. At least they did that to try to, you know.
Well, they had three callbacks to this story. This one, and then they had the one when Hobbs came out. You were reminded of it. And then Taz talked about it again, and we'll get to those.
That was funny.
All right.
Story time. Promo. So 10.
Yeah, there you go. story time with Adam Cole. We haven't seen him in a while. The Bucks and Red Dragon are out there with him. He says that he's still not medically cleared, and he came to AEW because of the Bucks. He's traveled all over the world with Red Dragon. Loyalty is everything to him. And he says, you know, I can't wrestle, and thus, you know, Bucks, I'm sorry to say, but I don't think you guys can win the tournament. And then they're like, huh? And they turn around, and Red Dragon attacks them, and it is Cole and Red Dragon as the heels. And who comes out to save the Bucks? It is none other than Hangman. I kind of wonder, like, who fits better in this storyline? I think we had sort of assumed it was like Kenny are they saving Kenny? Like that's the part I don't get.
I bet Kenny comes back as a heel and upset about, you know, the Bucks back with Hangman.
Yeah, yeah, it's quite possible he just goes to the other side. But yeah, I just they were in the midst of that storyline, and then, you know, then Kenny had to get all the surgeries and stuff. So. They were going to pilmanize the Bucks until Hangman saved them. So they're setting up, you know, for the Trios title. They're setting up that feud. And yeah, I was kind of surprised. I didn't think they were going to turn on them quite so soon because they like to draw these things out. But I guess, like you said, it's, you know, All Out is coming, and they got this Trios title to figure out. And I imagine those are going to be the two teams.
I feel like this wasn't earned, though, right? It was out of nowhere, but not in a good way, not in a big shocking way. Because I felt like it was coming as Cole was talking. Like, he didn't seem like, what a shocking turn. He just kind of felt it was going to happen. And we had a turn this week, a turn last week, a turn a week before. Like, it's like every week they were having a turn, so I don't know how much these really mean anything anymore. Now back, I gave him credit for showing a highlight from last week of Hook winning the title. If this was, remember Tony Khan was like, this is going to be the big angle. There's a big angle coming. Remember I kept talking about that. This is your big angle, dude. You just don't never talk about it again the whole show, right? You try to get interviews with the guys in the back, explain what they did. Like, it's a whole, the commentators will continue to talk about it. You come back from into the second hour, you show a highlight of what happened like earlier in this tonight. this happened. The Bucks were turned on by the Undisputed Elite, blah, blah, blah. You know, like, you keep focusing on it to make it a big deal. But it happens, and it's forgotten about, and that's it.
So, and it was also like in this second segment. I would at least put it at the top of the hour.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that would have made it feel more important. Because I thought the same thing. I was like, oh, they did the turn. It's not the main event angle. And it was second on the show. On a show that didn't have a ton of star power as it was. Because, you know, this was not that show. This is... like, you know, the lead up to some of these bigger shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just kind of like, wow, that's an interesting decision for him to put them second here instead of in a more important spot. But maybe the idea was, you know, we had the first segment with Cassidy. Now let's keep those guys with the Bucks and then, you know, move on from there. But yeah, that was it. I probably liked it more than you. More so because, you know, it's time to pull the trigger on some of these things. Well, and so I like to see the movement in the storyline.
I know there'll be some listeners out there like, John, what are you talking about? They've been teasing this since they showed up. And I know they had some teases early on, but I'm guessing that maybe because of the injuries.
Yeah. Yeah. Cole being out.
Well, and like Tony Khan just like had to get it done now.
Kyle O'Reilly too, right? Cause he
Kyle O'Reilly's out. So kind of like, instead of doing, kind of like looking at like, okay, I originally had this for All Out, but maybe I can push it to the November pay-per-view and it's kind of, you know, really kind of start telling a good story here. And but whatever, it's done, and now we're gonna get the trio. When is that thing starting? The trio tournament. They haven't announced it.
But if it's going to pay off at All Out, it's got to be soon.
Yeah, it's got to be soon, and great. Nothing but great to see those matches.
I think the matches will be good for. Like these teams, I think that match will be good. We'll see who mm-hmm. else they put together. I mean, I don't know how many other natural teams they have. Are they going to have a BCC team? You know, because they have all these factions, but I'm not sure what the I don't how many natural three person teams are there.
Yeah.
All right, Mox promo. He says he doesn't care if Jericho wins or Wheeler wins, and people may think that is just a non-answer, but no, that's just how he feels. He doesn't care because it doesn't matter. He's just whoever's the competitor against him, he's just going to try to break their face. And he said when Blackpool Combat Club is all said and done, they're going to make the Heart Dungeon look like a daycare. So Christian, this was a taped interview from before, earlier in the day. I don't know if maybe they played this on Twitter. I don't know if they did or not. He's with Tony, and it looks like they're in
the parking lot
of the building.
Underground parking lot, yeah.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, Christian is talking about how Jungle Boy's parents were terrible the way that they raised him. And all of a sudden, the Jungle Boy drives into this parking lot. He doesn't really come close to hitting Tony or Christian, but they made it sound like he was going to kill everybody, and he's just this reckless guy.
Yeah.
And drives a car, and then they bounce out. So we didn't get to talk about this. What did you think about Jungle Boy's promo?
I thought it started good, but then it went to very like rehearsed material that didn't seem natural. And then as soon as he started like ramping back up, I thought he's going to at least close it out pretty strong here. He got interrupted by Christian. So I kind of heard that.
That was funky too, because their sound and the everything wasn't. Yeah. There. It wasn't.
Vibing. Actually, I would have waited. I would have waited on the Christian promo. I would have let Jungle Boy respond here that last week and then have Christian show up this week.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Britt Baker, Jamie Hayter versus Thunderstorm. Toni Storm looked like she was having a lot of fun. There was even a moment where she had tagged in and she goes out and she's like, oh, am I supposed to be in? And she goes in and then she just tags right back out. She's kind of laughing. There was one major thing that I thought was a big time flaw in this match. So Toni goes to the top rope And Thunder Rosa is going to get Britt up, so they're going to hit that finish. Mm-hmm. And Rebel comes to the apron. The referee, and I rewound it because I was kind of wondering what he was doing. He looks at Rebel out of the side of his eye, and then he turns back really fast as if he wasn't supposed to see her.
Uh-huh.
And so then he starts counting on Thunder Rosa for picking up Britt Baker. Like, he's not counting Tony on the top rope because he's not supposed to see Rebel. And then Britt gets out of it, and poor Tony has to sit on this top rope for what felt like years so that Britt could get out of that move that Thunder had her in and then go and hit the spot from the top rope. And I was just like thinking, like, what was the idea? Because nobody drew the ref.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Rebel was supposed to get up there sooner. I was trying to get her down.
And,
yeah, I was so confused.
And Tony needs to be like looking at Rebel, like, yeah, telling the ref, yeah, get her out of here. And then as the ref's back's turned, and yeah, she gets knocked off or something, you know? It's just another typical AEW amateur hour women's match. I mean, that's what it was. I mean, there's some good moments. And Thunder Rosa, I mean, the opening, was she like a double leg and like the worst punches in wrestling history?
Would you see her shirt?
I know, silly. Like, no one got it. Sandbag is 2014, which is probably true. And I was talking to someone that's like, they're like, God, she is so bad. I'm like, I think you and I are the only ones that really see this. Because I always see like so much. I mean, I like Melissa. I'm just saying, you know, her work is just not as good. The praise, she doesn't earn the praise that she gets. I just think they like the look and personality, but like in ring,
a lot of it is personality. A lot of it is she's somebody who gives back, right? She's mm-hmm. very good in her community. She gives back to women's wrestling. She's a really positive influence there. And when you are that positive influence, people are going to root for you and they're going to want to see you do well. And that's some of it. I'm not anti Thunder Rosa. I just think, you know, there's some, as far as I can tell, like I don't have a bias for or against her. I'm not this giant indie wrestling fan who goes out to these shows and goes like, oh, you know, it's cool to see the AEW stars there. So I don't have that. And I also don't dislike what she's doing. I just see, you know, room for growth. And I think she's got some charisma. They had that match, the bloody match, where she came out of it, you know, just as higher than she went in the fans' eyes, as far as, mm-hmm. you know, as far as who she was at that moment. And, you know, I think that she's got great opportunity now. It seems like Tony Khan really likes her. And I just want to see her continue to have better matches than she's currently having. But look, you know, there's, you know, she had the match at the pay-per-view with Serena Deeb.
Yeah.
A lot of people really, really, really like that match. Yeah. And so there's, you know, there's stuff there positive too. Just because we don't like a specific match on TV and that spot just ruined the whole thing for me. I couldn't look at it as anything but like that after. Mm-hmm. But you also can say, oh yeah, and then she's had all these other matches where she was fine or where she was actually good. But
did you watch the match last week?
No, that's where I stopped watching.
that was horrible. You know, yeah, she had a great match. Her best match I think she's ever had in AEW, I thought, was with Serena Deeb, and that's because she's in with Serena Deeb. And I like Thunder Rosa, but she needs someone like Serena Deeb, right? And there's not many Serena Deebs. There's only one, actually. So, and that's, you know, she's not, I think she's not one to carry it, right? She needs a good dance partner. And unfortunately, there's not that many in AEW right now. Hopefully soon they'll be getting some more, you know, if that's possible.
Well, they definitely got to pick it up because we know Triple H is going to put some focus back on the women in WWE.
Mm-hmm.
And that means, you know, there's going to be less people who are going to be freed up to go to AEW. So they got to figure out, you know, with what they got. So Tony, they do this. Spot where all four women kind of take shots at each other, and the last woman standing is Hayter. Then Tony and Thunder do these double Germans to set up these multiple hip attacks, and Tony's just blasting people with her ass. There must be some smoke and mirrors to that move, because it looks like she kills everybody, but nobody gets hurt. So maybe she's just great with that move, because everyone's head just slams backwards.
Or her hips hitting the second turnbuckle. You know, as you're laying there, you're putting your head back. You know, you're not taking the full blow unless you're just in the wrong position. So, yeah, it's not, you know, it's not the worst, you know. She comes so fast. It looks so fast you can't tell what they're doing.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it looks good.
Yeah,
And that's funny. Like, you got Toni Storm here. She's losing again. I get it. Why? Because,
well, haters getting the title match.
Yeah. It's like, you know, oh, they got Soho. They got Toni Storm. They're gonna do something with these guys. Same spot.
So Tony goes to the well one too many times. Britt pushes Thunder in the way. So Tony hits Thunder, and then she eats a lariat by Jamie Hayter, and Hayter wins. I like the finish. I thought the finish was pretty smart. I don't like seeing Toni Storm win or lose, because I think she should be right there at the tippy top. But that's not her role right now. Kind of cool for Jamie Hayter. I know Jamie Hayter's got a nice little fan base there of people who want to see her. If she can get to that next level, we'll see is that Friday or is that Saturday?
Saturday. That's Battle of the Belts.
Yeah. So, Jamie Hayter wins, gets title shot. There was this weird video with Sammy Guevara and Ty Conti. They got married.
They're getting married.
Or they're getting married. Okay. And is that a shoot or is that story? Like, I couldn't tell.
God bless him. Good luck, young kids.
And then Eddie Kingston just interrupts, and he's like, why is this stuff on a wrestling show? And he goes, he's got a contract signed, and I guess he wants Sammy at All Out. So they're going to have a match at All Out. Yeah. Eddie's kind of like the Rodney Dangerfield. He doesn't get the respect. He doesn't get the videos.
Doesn't win his feud with Chris Jericho.
Nope. All right. This is where Taz comes in, and he goes, look, guys, you know, Team Taz was great. We got three guys, and they're all for the better of being in Team Taz, but Team Taz is no more. So everyone, including his son, they're out on their own.
They're all on their own. You notice how he has to read Tony Khan's explanation of this, so he has the glasses on. And then when he's ready to kind of close it out with his own little personal stamp on it, he's trying to explain the story because it makes him – it's just ridiculous. And now he takes the glasses off and he kind of cuts his own little promo. I thought that was funny.
Will Hobbs, new entrance.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of cool.
Very cool. Made him look like a star.
Gets Ren Jones, who I noticed had a 0-1 record in AEW this year.
Oh man.
So now it's 0-2 because he got squashed. they don't normally do squash matches.
Good.
But they did the squash here. And Ricky Starks attacks Will Hobbs. He is so fast that the camera didn't move with him as he was running to the ring. The camera stayed in the spot. So he runs right by the camera, and the camera stays looking at the crowd for at least 1.5 Mississippi. And then Starks, so we miss the attack, or we miss him jumping into the ring, and Hobbs gets him with a brutal or a great looking spine buster, brutal for Ricky Starks. Says now, because we know that he's got the neck thing. Every bump that he takes, he sells the neck. So, and he just leaves him laying. So we're gonna get Hobbs and Starks probably at All Out. I don't know. I'm not sure if that's gonna be the All Out match, but it looks like it's coming soon.
Yeah, I'm guessing All Out would be the destination for that match. I like the squash. Right? I thought that was great. Okay, great. Boom. Just turned heel last week. Get him over. gets a convincing, just impressive win, destroys a guy. Now maybe he can cut a promo afterwards explaining what happened, why he did what he did. But then Starks comes out, and you know, he laid out Starks. It's like, could we get a week or two of Starks kind of being out of it, right? And maybe next week we can get Hobbs maybe crushing another guy, and then maybe he starts talking about what he did. Like, it just totally took away from, I don't know, to me it took away from the squash match. Like, you gotta, he just, like, Starks is fine, he's running out, right? Like, what if last week when he clotheslined him, and it was crazy, that clothesline to Starks' neck, what if last week he's, you know, can't compete, he's out of it. How, we don't know how long it's gonna be, right? And then he comes back in a few weeks. Like, it just, it meant nothing. Like, there's no, like, it just means nothing. It's just, they need to have time to let it marinate and talk about. They don't talk about it. Anything's happened, or they just, and then he's back next week, or they don't ever talk about it again. So it's like, I was kind of frustrated with that.
So then we get back-to-back promos. Miro's promo, his little video package promo going into the break. And then, you know, it's the same Redeemer promo. Darby coming out of the break. And I guess Darby was the reason why Brody King got signed. And that's why Brody's mad at him, because Darby gets to take credit for bringing him in. I don't know. I was kind of confused about that.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't understand this either. Like, why would you say that? Yeah. So the vignettes of Malakai Black talking about as he's bringing these people to the House of Black in, like, that means nothing, right? Like, the real story is Malakai Black got a phone call from Tony Khan. Oh, you know, it'd be great for your group because you're kind of weird. Like, got this big guy with a bunch of tattoos. Just stupid.
And then we're getting a coffin match next Wednesday.
Oh, coffin match next Wednesday. What else we're getting? This weekend we're getting some kind of street fight. I know it's Friday, we're getting some kind of street fight, right? We've seen someone, a tornado match, some shit. Like, fuck, we got a dumpster match this week. This is what you call hot shotting, folks. Hot shotting. Trying to get over.
Have they had a normal singles match yet? Have they had one?
Who?
Darby and Brody.
Brody killed them. Remember?
You were
on vacation, I think.
Oh, okay.
2 weeks ago.
Was that it? Okay.
Yeah, it was the War Games show, right? Because whatever. Either way, Brody King killed him, destroyed him, and now we're having his coffin match. So,
yeah. Okay, so then we get the Christian and the Matt Hardy match that I talked about. So Matt Hardy has Christian up on the top turnbuckle, and he hits him with a superplex, and JR just buries the superplex.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, you know, I'm not really sure, you know, who gets hurt most out of this superplex. There's a fine line. And I was like, dude, I'm pretty sure that when Barry Windham hit his superplex, the guy who took the superplex got the worst of it, JR.
Well, yeah, and also because Barry Windham actually covered a guy and pinned him, usually. That's why, you know, same thing with Bob Orton Jr. They just lay there for – everyone just lays there. They hit it, and they lay there, right? And it's a double down. And then instead of just actually going for the cover.
So Matt puts Christian on a table on the outside. And this is after after, you know, hitting the side of the apron, which JR compared to the sidewalk. It's just like the sidewalk.
When Christian took that bump on that apron when he got pushed off, and it looked like he really jacked up his elbow. I was a little concerned, like, holy shit, I think this is not good. But he seemed to be, he gutted through, so I hope he's okay. You know, he seemed to be lifting his arm and stuff, but I don't know, man. It looks scary. After that bump, I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, so Matt puts him on the table, jumps from the apron to the floor with an elbow drop, and he misses. Now, we get the same move from the next, very next match, but from a much higher spot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not the guy who goes, oh, you know, you can't do the same move. Like, you know, you watch a basketball game and, you know.
You have to be that guy. Like, Tony Khan should have been that guy. You know, Matt, I know you feel like you have to go through a table because you're a Hardy boy and that's your deal. But you know what? Max Caster's jumping off our entranceway through a table with an elbow drop. So I'm going to say no.
Yeah, I'm saying I'm not usually that guy.
Mm.
But in this case, I would have been that guy.
Mm. Tony Khan should have been that guy. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, Matt could have done something else. They didn't need the spot anyway. And then, so Christian eventually wins with the kill switch. And Jungle Boy comes out with a steel chair. Christian gets out of Dodge. So
yeah,
he hasn't gotten his yet.
I wasn't a fan of this match, mainly the length. Like, I thought Christian's been such a hot heel, and Matt Hardy is looking like Road Warrior Hawk from 1998 Raw. Like, just old and slow and, you know, all that. Like, I just kind of, I would have preferred a shorter match here, a one segment deal where Christian wins convincingly and clean, and then he can do what they, and then here's, I don't know what you thought about the, wait, okay, explain what happened in the post match and give me your, I want to hear your thoughts, what you thought was a good thing or a bad thing.
Well, Christian thinks that Jungle Boy's coming down the ramp. He sneaks mm-hmm. from behind.
Luchasaurus is coming down the ramp.
Oh, is that who was?
The music, because his music played. So he knows it's Luchasaurus because the music played. Plus, he thinks Jungle Boy was kicked out of the arena from trying to...
Right, from earlier.
Yeah.
Because he had all those people grab him. Yeah, and then Jungle Boy came from behind, and he had a chair, and Christian was waiting. Christian was also had a chair, right?
Yeah, because he was going to do the concerto.
Yeah, yeah.
We had the attempt... On this show alone, we had two elbow drops of tables. We had an attempt of a pilmanizing, and we also had an attempt of a concerto.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, I didn't like this because I thought Christian was the smart heel here. Like, this is like the Bayface's like attempt to catch Christian off guard, and he was on it and snuck out. And I thought Jungle Boy's left there with his dick in his hand. Like once again, outsmarted by Christian.
So I'm fine with that as long as Jungle Boy gets something next week, right? Because he did the promo, he got something, then Christian took it away.
Mm-hmm.
It's the end of this storyline is Jungle Boy's going to get Christian, and that's going to be the apex of it. So as long as there's this give and take, and it's not 5 weeks of Christian outsmarting this dude and Jungle Boy looking like a goofball, I'm okay. But Jungle Boy has to get something next week because it can't just be, you know, Christian just, I mean, he made fun of the guy's father who passed away. Like, that is a lot. And then, so then, you know, Jungle Boy has to get some back. Oh, it's the divorce. No wonder your wife divorced you.
I wonder if Christian keeps pulling the slip here, are they going to do like a strap match at All Out or a bull rope match or a jungle twine match or whatever it is, you know, like maybe they can ask Triple H, they can borrow the what was that, Punjabi death match,
the prison normal match.
Yeah, they could, yeah, Punjabi prison
as,
match
as long as it's not a chairs match.
Oh god.
Didn't that WWE did a chairs match one time on a TLC show, I think.
Yeah, I think I was there for that.
Yeah,
think,
was it like Mark Henry and
No, it was Randy Orton. Rey Mysterio and Randy Orton.
Oh, it was Rey Mysterio and Randy
Orton. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The Ruby chairs match.
Sounds A.
Amazing. Yeah, so again, I'm fine with it as long as Jungle Boy gets something back next week. Now, if he tries to get Christian next week and then he can't, like, then, yeah, then now he's looking like too much of a goofball. But I guess the other part of this story is Christian's the vet. He's been there before. He knows all the tricks. Mm-hmm. And thus, I'm fine with him being a little bit ahead of the Jungle Boy until Jungle Boy figures it out. Hopefully.
Yeah, we'll see.
Hopefully he does.
I have a bad feeling that Luchasaurus is going to turn.
Again?
I don't know. I just have a bad feeling because, like, he just kind of left there. Like, we didn't explain. Like, I
didn't
know.
I didn't understand. I get. Yeah, they, I guess they kind of explained it, but.
Yeah.
It wasn't the greatest explanation for him turning back and forth.
I think Tony Khan had that moment like in his head, like, and then he's going to step aside, and the people are going to go crazy. You know?
Yeah. All right. Daniel Garcia does an interview, calls himself the Dragon Slayer. I popped at this line. The greatest technical sports entertainer of all time.
Yeah, he's been using that for a little bit. The Dragon Slayer, when you said the Dragon Slayer, I thought, is he going to pull out the old 1994 Stunning Steve Austin tights with just the Dragon Slayer on the back, right? When he was when Steve Austin Ricky Steamboat for the U.S. title. That'd be kind of cool.
All right, Ethan Page.
Oh, God.
He and Eddie Kingston. Nobody, no respect for these guys.
Yeah, why am I not on TV? Well, how'd you get there with the microphone in your hand?
You're on TV right now, buddy.
Yeah. Waiting for the camera to turn on. But
why doesn't he have an action figure?
Because, plain guys with tights, that's not a seller.
I wonder if he does have an action figure or if there's one in the making.
Oh, maybe Figures Company has one. they do good stuff.
Well, that's the one that he has, which is from our buddy Chris DePetrillo's Figures Toy Company. That's his figure right now.
That's a collector's item. You should all get it.
Yeah. Everyone should go to Figures.
And the Jeff Cobb one. Get that Jeff Cobb one.
Oh, that's the only, that's one of the two or three wrestling figures I actually have is the Jeff Cobb one. But yeah, I guess he's going to be in... is he in the Unrivaled? Is that I'm trying to figure out if he does have another one. No, it doesn't look like it. So that might be the only one.
Does he got an Upper Deck digital card?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
Is he gonna be in the video game that we saw some footage of? And some...
I'm not a video game guy, so I can't tell if it looks good or not.
It doesn't look great. It's specifically a first try game from what I can tell. But I mean, most of the fans just hope that it plays well. They don't really care that much about the graphics.
Mm-hmm.
Though I saw Dutra talking about some stuff being that he thought was that they should be a little bit better at. But otherwise,
someone put their Chris Jericho like video game graphic on his body, like one of those pictures in the mirror pictures. It was great.
Back to Paige. He's just complaining. My guy, Stoke Dog, is just right there, and he screams at him, like, what are you doing? And Paige kind of looks at him, and he gives him a business card, and Stoke Dog walks away, and then Ethan Page looks at the business card, and he just joins him.
That's it. Quick, let's get it done now.
What happened to Lambert?
I don't know. Because that ATT business is going on right now, I guess.
Yes.
What's Scorpio Sky? They're probably going to feud.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
Ethan Page would have been a perfect guy for this Battle of Belts versus Wardlow. They would have kept him strong leading into Battle of Belts.
All right. 2.0 and Anna Jay in the back. They do a little bit of an interview about Jericho. I love. If this Anna Jay gimmick is a shoot, or I mean, it is the work, she's supposed to be a bad promo and go crazy, I kind of like it. But if the idea is she's supposed to cut a good promo, then it's really bad. But I'm not sure what it is. But I will say that I laughed.
I laughed because when they came back out of the promo, Taz cannot stop laughing how bad this was. And just Excalibur and JR are just staring at him. And he's just like, he's trying to talk about it, and he just can't even get through it because he's laughing so hard because it was so bad.
Yeah.
Thank God she looks great.
Well, she said she's the hottest, but she's also the toughest.
Yeah. So
that's the gimmick. She's
the EST of AEW?
I was thinking it's a little bit more Carmella. It's a little bit more Carmella kind of character than it is Bianca.
So. Yeah.
Because Carmella always says how she's the most beautiful woman in WWE.
Mm.
All right. The dumpster match, which we just reviewed on our Patreon for WrestleMania 14 with Cactus and Terry Funk against the New Age Outlaws. And there was some stuff taken from that match. Obviously, the Ass Boys, their pops, was right in that match. So that's what everyone thinks about when they think of a dumpster match because... Is that the only one that's ever happened?
It's the only one that's ever happened, at least that I know about, at least on a national basis.
So no rap for the Acclaimed as they run out of their side and immediately attack Billy Gunn. And then Bowens has got a garbage can, and which means that both Ass Boys have to run their face right into his garbage can so they can all be down. So then Max can do his rap. Everyone had to be out. So Max does the rap. He says they're going to make the Ass Boys retire like Vince McMahon, which got a good little pop, and I'm sure lots of people chuckled, and Bowens made the face. It's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you went there.
Everyone was waiting for that.
It was entertaining. I'll give it to you.
Yeah, it was funny. Yeah, I liked it.
So this was, you know, because I'm trying to think back when we reviewed that match. Because Mick Foley and Terry Funk were in that match, they tried to make it, like, because it's a ridiculous idea of a match, but Foley and Funk at least wanted to make it make sense. This actually resembled more of a coffin match to me, because there's always that spot in the coffin match where you put the guy in, and then it takes you 5 hours to shut the coffin door, it's all of a sudden it's so heavy now, because Acclaimed are in the dumpster. They get tossed in pretty early, and the Ass Boys are about to shut the dumpster, but I forget which one. Colton, he went on one side, and instead of starting to pull the top down, he had to wait for the brother to be on the other side, as if this thing was so heavy. So of course we got that, and they busted out of it. Then it got crazy. Austin was perched on the top of the entranceway, and he's going to dive down on Bowens, who was laid out on a table. But Bowens gets up, and now Austin is he's calling plays from the bird nest spot, in a sport. Like, oh, look, you got to do this, you got to do this. As he's doing that, Caster sneaks up behind him, and he tosses him right into the dumpster. Then Bowens puts Colton on the table, and Caster hits him with the flying elbow through the table. Bowens puts Colton in the dumpster, and then they finally close the lid on them. And they use these little ties to
zip ties.
Zip ties to keep it shut. And then this is where they owed to the original dumpster match, and they pushed the thing over the stage and onto the floor. I think it was a little heavier than they realized, because it took them a while.
Because the wheels, I think they only turn, two of the wheels turn. Okay. The other ones are straight. And I think they couldn't figure, because did they go over this when they were going to do it? I'm assuming they did. I assume they went through it and walked through, because they should have positioned. Oh, man, they should have visited the dumpster. It's a straight push. But anyways, go ahead. I still got a lot to say about this match.
and then that was it. They pushed, and then it tipped over, and the top still kind of pops open, and then they quickly cut the camera away. And I don't imagine the Ass Boys are in there when it tipped over.
Was there a trap? Maybe it might have been a trap door or something.
I'm hoping that there was.
I'm hoping there was. That's a rough landing. I mean, when Mick Foley and Terry Funk got pushed off, they just fell on the side, right? It went down and to the side. It didn't go all the way over and tipped over.
Yeah.
And first of all, why do we have this match? Why is it a dumpster match?
I was waiting for you to tell me. I didn't watch the last 2 weeks.
I didn't watch the rap battle. I didn't watch Rampage, but no one else did either. So, I don't know why. Why are we going straight to a gink match? And why is it a dumpster match? There is a reason why at WrestleMania, what was that?
14.
12? No, 13.
14.
There's a reason. 14. There's a reason why they had that dumpster match. It's because the New Age Outlaws attacked them. Cactus Jack and Terry Funk on a Raw, put them in the dumpster, pushed them off, and it was taken seriously for almost a half hour of the show. there was they, you know, there's no wrestling. It was all about their safety and are they okay? They got to get the ambulance and everyone's concerned. All the wrestlers are coming out. Wrestlers are who are came out are concerned about Cactus Jack and Terry Funk are so upset and disgusted about what New Age Outlaws did that they want to fight. Remember old Too Cold Scorpio was throwing blows in there, right? At the old the New Age Outlaws. Remember that?
Yeah.
And Vince is out there. He's upset with the New Age Outlaws. They took it too far. It was a big deal. And it was a big match at WrestleMania. This was just a throwaway gimmick just to do it. It's just hot shotting. And now what? Now you push them off the thing. Is that it? Is that the end of it? Is it the end of the program? Would you just start this like 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago?
What happened to Billy, by the way?
Billy was came out with them and they claimed attacked him.
I know, but then he just couldn't get up.
Disappeared.
He was Austin Theory at SummerSlam. Just
Brock Lesnar F5 the guy.
He F5 the guy one time.
Brock Lesnar.
He put Roman Reigns through every single thing and this dude kept getting up before 10.
Yeah. Well, you know. It's just shitty. Jim Ross even said right when he came off the break.
Bowling shoe.
Well, it's been bowling shoe ugly. Like it was bad. It was bad.
So I didn't hate the match. I was entertained by all four dudes. I thought they knew the predicament that they were in. You know, these guys are also very young, so it's not like they're, you know, they're not Cactus Jack and Terry Funk in the same match where they're going to figure out a way to do it correctly and get it over. But they were entertaining. The dumpster was just the prop of the moment that they had to use, and I thought they did a really good job. The match is stupid. Like there's no reason for it, and it's not a match that is built to do anything but get a cheap pop at the end.
Yep, it's all was.
All right, so for Friday, we have Moxley versus Mance Warner. All I know about Mance Warner is he does a lot of MLW stuff. What do you know about Mance Warner?
He did MLW. I don't know if he's still on MLW. I liked him when I was watching MLW. I thought he was, you know, kind of that, you know, redneck, you know, brawling kind of guy. I liked him. And he was he's interesting. I don't know. I haven't really watched him since. I don't know how he's been, but I'm guessing just another guy for do some blood with Mox.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. They're both of these guys are going to bleed.
Yeah.
Madison Rayne is going to be on the show. She's now
wrestling too.
Yeah, she's now with AEW. I think is she overseeing the women's division?
She's like a person in between the women and Tony.
Got it.
And I think there's because like remember the lack of communication. A lot of people that have complaints about Tony and his lack of communication. I think this is where they can go to a QT, Tony Schiavone. I think he was another one. Madison Rayne, Sanjay. They can complain to them, and then they talk to Tony, and you know. So,
by the way, I read the description of Sanjay's job.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to read it because, like this, I imagine it's just craziness. Just it's a live show, and it's just craziness in the back and all that stuff. But I was just like, man, if this is the actual description, and if these are all the tasks that he has to do, I was just like, my brain that organized brain and that process brain that I have, the operations mentality. Mm-hmm. I was getting anxiety just reading this this thing. So, okay, Sanjay Dutt has been promoted to Vice President of Production and Creative Coordination. In this role, he will coordinate communication of AEW storylines, liaise between post-production and key staff to maintain content workflow, produce ancillary content, and mentor new producers. That sounds like a dude who's going to be running around backstage like a chicken with his head cut
and
off.
On-air talent.
And yeah, and being in the group with Jay Lethal and Satnam Singh. So, more power to the guy. If he can You know, if he can do a good job there, then man, he's got quite the skill set. Because I was just like, oh my god, this just sounds like chaos.
Yeah, oh, he has experience working WWE and Impact, and you know, he's been in that role for a long time.
I imagine it's pretty similar to what he's already been doing.
Yeah.
Okay, and then we got Swerve and Keith Lee against Tony Nese and Josh Woods as well.
In a street fight.
For Rampage.
That's what it was. A street fight. And then next week on Dynamite is a tornado tag between the Lucha Brothers and Andrade and Rush. Now, you watched some of the show last week.
Yeah, I got like 50, 60% through.
So you watched the handicap match, you see Tony Nese.
I fast forwarded through that.
Well, Josh Woods attacks Keith Lee in the back.
He laid out Keith.
And so already they're a team, and the first match that they're having as a team is against the champions, but now it's a street fight.
Yeah, I would have rather seen one-on-one.
One-on-one, or maybe as a team they could beat someone maybe this Friday to lead to a title match.
The problem with having a tag match is that they are the champions, so they cannot lose.
No. I'm saying Josh Woods and Tony Nese established them by winning a tag team match on, say, Rampage.
What I'm saying is that's the problem with this match is you put these guys in this match against the champs, and it means that they have to lose the first time out. So that's why I'd rather see Woods against Keith Lee because, you know, maybe by shenanigans he could beat Keith Lee and then that sets up the tag match or something.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, at the end of the day, Tony Nese, Josh Woods is not going to be any kind of big business. So, yeah. I understand their role. It's just like, can we at least establish them for the win and then kind of have them, like, give him a win at least leading into it so we kind of know that, okay, they're a team now and they're possibly a threat.
It happened on Dark.
Oh, fuck.
Battle of the Belts 3 on Saturday. We talked about Claudio and Takeshita, Thunder Rosa, Jamie Hayter, and then Wardlow and Jay Lethal. And then on Wednesday, Darby against Brody, Coffin Match, Lucha Bros against Andrade and Rush. Jade Cargill, open challenge, and Moxley versus the winner of Jericho and Wheeler Yuta, which we will talk about right now as the main event. So Jericho comes out. He's got the 2.0 with him. Claudio comes out to second Wheeler Yuta. Very early in this match, the JAS, the 2.0, gets sent to the back. Did Claudio go back, or did he stay at ringside?
Did he walk with them back?
Like, well, make sure I know he was like walking toward.
Oh yeah,
them.
He did. Yeah, I think he made sure they left.
Okay,
that's why Mox, because if he was out there, he would have interfered right away.
Right.
Or saved.
Yeah, saved from the lion tamer.
Yeah.
So, JR immediately was like, thankfully, now we actually get a one-on-one match.
The best.
So Wheeler Yuta does three dives out, hits the three. So he's that's kind of the Daniel Bryan thing that Daniel Bryan does. We get closer to the end of the match. Jericho misses a Judas effect. Wheeler Yuta gets a sweet cradle. Jericho kicks out, eventually gets the Boston Crab, Walls of Jericho, whatever version you want to call it. Gets a little bit of a higher arch on it, so it's got the Lion Tamer. I think that was the tease that we are going to get that version of Jericho like Moxley had wanted. I don't know. The Lionheart Chris Jericho was like a
mid-carder.
Yeah, but wasn't it? Was his character was like a little bit of like a heartthrobby guy, right?
I mean, was it Corazon de Leon, right?
Yeah,
his name, right?
Yeah.
But that
wasn't like the tough guy.
I mean, in WCW as Lionheart, let's start there. You know, Cruiserweight champion. I don't know was he called Lionheart when he was like the conspiracy theory Chris Jericho?
I don't remember when he's a heel.
I don't remember. But you know, and then the best part, like last week, like Mox's promo, I want the Super J Cup. Chris Jericho, the guy that lost in the second round of Chris Benoit, that's the guy you want. You don't want, I don't know, the first. I know you can't say it, but, you know, the big star to headline at stadiums, you know, or something like that, right? Like, because he did, right? Versus Triple H, he had that match.
Yeah. I mean, the best Jericho was the Nick Bockwinkel version of Jericho.
Yeah.
That was the best one.
Yeah, I want that guy, you know, I don't know. I don't know why. This is a Mark thing to say. Like, I want the Super Jacob. It was just, I started laughing. I had to write that. I had to quickly tweet that out. Like, what the hell?
So then they added the last survivor of the Heart Dungeon to it. They added that part. So that's also part of what Mox wanted. The thing about it is, okay, so I'll talk about the end of it and then I'll make this point. But so obviously it gets him to tap. He holds on to the move, so that forces Moxley to come out.
Yeah.
And now he's got the thing way up on the shoulder, so this is like the Lion Tamer version. So Mox comes out. Jericho says, you know, that Mox has unleashed something inside of him, and he is going to get the Lion Heart and the last survivor of the Heart Dungeon, and he's going to, what did he say? He's going to stretch Moxley?
Yeah, he's going to stretch him.
And he's going to win the title. Now, the reason why that to me was kind of goofy, Moxley's training with Josh Barnett. Chris Jericho's not training with Josh Barnett. Like, well, Chris Jericho's, singing rock songs and, he's probably training, pretty hard as far as, striking. You see him doing striking stuff. But just the idea that he would stretch Moxley when, all Moxley does is train grappling. That's like what he does for his workouts, is he just trains grappling. So that was kind of funny to me. But obviously not everyone knows that. So he says he's gonna stretch the guy and win the title.
I thought the match was fine to the finish. Like the finish with, Jericho trying to go for the bat and the referee Aubrey stops him, takes the bat out, and then Jericho low blows.
Yeah.
He should have low blowed him and hit the juice effect and pinned him. And then after the pin, lock on the Lion Tamer and hold it, right? Like,
instead of
beating Yuta flat, like, there's no heat there. You just beat him clean. Like,
but I think they're trying to sell the idea of this submission as a way that he's going to beat Moxley.
You do it after the match.
But he wouldn't have won the match with this. So if now it's quite possible that I am buying into maybe more of a story that they're trying to tell. But from what I got out of it, Jericho's like, look, I tapped out your boy and I'm going to stretch you and tap you out too. Yeah. If he would have knocked him out with the Judas effect and then just sunk it in at the end, like he wouldn't have won with that move. He won.
Mox, you want to stretch people? I'll stretch your boy. Boom, we start stretching him. And then Claudio doesn't run out for some reason because he's still chasing after 2.0, whoever the hell it was out there, 2.0.
You know what Moxley, happened?
You need to talk to Mox. What?
I think...
Geshka got him?
Anna JAS choked him.
Oh, shit. We got to talk to Mox. We got to say, hey, could you be a little closer to the ring if you know something's going to go down? Like, where's he coming from? Is that a food truck outside? Like, what is going on?
Well, I think wherever he had cut his promo, maybe just hung out there the whole time.
The boiler room? The old boiler. He just loves the boiler room like Mankind.
Nah, the only thing I talk to Mox about is whatever the next UFC card is.
We got to throw that out there. You got to slip it in. See if he answers it. But like, yeah. The Rock wants to know why he... If he knew Wheeler was going to be in trouble, possibly, because those damn JS are just underhanded individuals. Well, because
he thought Claudio had it. That's why. He trusted Claudio.
Man, there's going to be some stretching going on at the BCC
dojo. Someone's going to get their nose flicked.
And my favorite part is, like, Regal, their manager, just doesn't even care. Like, he's getting stretched. Oh, well.
No, because he thinks they got to figure out that on their own. Yeah. Like, that's part of the training.
What the evil master.
All right.
That how long is this contract? Because I don't know how long he'll stay for.
Well, that's the guy that I immediately thought about when Triple H was taken back over. Like, that's his boy. So,
Tony Khan's like nervous, like, oh, I got 5 years. I got 5 years here. Like, just trying to make it out there, like, hey, I don't know if he has ever 5 years, though. But I think if I'm WWE, because it's I think this is a time for Triple H to kind of shine, right? Like, versus the AEW part of it, where it's like, okay, what if I go back? What if I go for a Wardlow? You know what I mean? Or MGF when he's available. You know, it could be interesting.
Regal coming back as like any sort of GM role would just on both shows to kind of like, you know, on Raw and SmackDown to tie things together, like that'd be amazing. But I like what he's doing here too. So whatever Regal wants to do, wherever his heart takes him, I'm fine with it.
Well, he's always been grateful for his time, right? Like he's just a class act, I think.
Yeah. All right, we are done here. We'll be back next week. I think I'm recording with Dave on Friday. I don't really bother Dave, you know, during the week because I know he's fired up, you know, doing the Observer. And so I haven't talked to him. Usually, I'll talk to him if he reaches out to me, which he does every once in a while about certain things. But I haven't talked to him, but I think we're going to be back on Thursday. That's kind of been our jam, so... Thursday at some point will probably be, and if it's not, then you know, sometimes we record it Saturday morning, but whatever it is, I think Dave and I will be back. So we'll hear. I haven't talked to that guy for 2 weeks as well, so that'll be a fun show.
Nice.
All right, so for John, I'm Double G. We'll see you when we see you. Peace out.